Ja, če ne bi bulil v zaslon pametnega telefona, te po zaslugi Evrope prozorna vrata nikoli ne bi mogla presenetiti. Sledeč direktivi 89/654 Evropskega sveta morajo namreč prozorna vrata na primerni višini imeti jasno označbo.
Evropa gre deep. Delovanje Evropskega parlamenta. Oddajo sofinancira Evropski parlament. Evropska medijska politika med konkurenčnostjo in pluralnostjo medijev. V današnjem Zeitgeistu se bomo posvetili medijski politiki Evropske unije in preučili, kakšno vlogo na tem področju igra Evropski parlament. Evropska unija je na področje medijev začela posegati v 80-ih letih prejšnjega stoletja. Od takrat je mogoče prepoznavati nasprotno stališče o regulaciji medijev med Evropsko komisijo in Evropskim parlamentom. Medtem, ko si Evropski parlament prizadeva za vzpostavitev mehanizmov za zaščito pluralnosti medijev, je glavni cilj Evropske komisije zagotavljanje prostega in konkurenčnega trga medijskih storitev. Poleg tega je vprašljivo, do katere mere je Evropska unija pristojna za regulacijo medijev v nasprotju z nacionalnimi državami. Alison Hercourt z Univerze v Exeteru razloži, da Evropska komisija nima pristojnosti, da bi se odzvala na pozive Evropskega parlamenta po zaščiti medijske pluralnosti.
The European Union is, of course, an economic union. It's not a political union like the Council of Europe, so it doesn't have the remit to put forward proposals for media plurality. The European Commission has jurisdiction over competition law and harmonization of standards and the removal of obstacles to trade. So it really isn't the forum for making this kind of policy.
Zgodovina evropske medijske politike se je pričela z liberalizacijo trga medijskih storitev v 80-ih letih. Vendar je bilo zaradi pomislekov v zvezi s ščitenjem javnega interesa potrebno harmonizirati korporativne interese z državnimi, tako da je sledila vrsta uredb o sovražnem govoru, prepovedi določenega načina oglaševanja, zaščiti otrok in podobno. Več Harcourt.
European communications policy started with telecommunications policy, and that was derived from competition law, and in particular a number of competition decisions which were made in the 1980s. And it started with the open network provision in 1989, and then also the Television Without Frontiers directive in 1989. And the purpose of this was to remove cross-border restrictions on broadcasts and provision of telecommunication services, yeah? And so that's how communications policy began. There was some concern from member states that there might be regulatory competition and erosion of minimal safeguards for the public interest. And for that reason, we had some kind of minimum harmonization over advertising, the protection of minors, the banning of certain types of advertising like religious or tobacco or health advertising, which was restricted at the national level. There was also some very soft measures on hate speech and other kinds of measures within these directives going forward. There were revisions in 2007 and then 2010, so now we have the Audiovisual Media Services Directive for cross-border television, which is now being updated. The European Parliament has taken a somewhat different approach because, of course, they're more of a political organization, even though they are not agenda setting. The European Commission sets the agenda in this field, whereas the European Parliament is involved in tripartite bargaining with the council. The council of ministers is the final decision maker. And they would like to interject more measures for oversight of pluralism mechanisms and also provisions for content provision. For example, they are interested in funding film and European content and promoting European identity.
Poskusi parlamenta, da bi reguliral lastništvo medijev, so se začeli leta 1984, kmalu potem, ko je Evropska komisija objavila zeleno knjigo o direktivi televizije brez meja oziroma Television Without Frontiers. Vendar Evropski svet v končni verziji direktive iz leta 1989 ni upošteval nobenega izmed njihovih predlogov. Televizija brez meja je tako vzpostavila enotni evropski audiovizualni trg s pravnim okvirom za prenos televizijskih programov med državami članicami. Po njej je za regulacijo medijskih podjetij pristojna država, v kateri imajo sedež, in ne država, v kateri oddajajo programske vsebine. Pred desetletjem je bila audiovizualna direktiva prenovljena tako, da je vključevala še spletne medije, razloži Marko Alafosi, profesor na Fakulteti komunikacijskih znanosti iz mesta Tampere na Finskem.
2007, it was 10 years ago, and the time at that point was that there was new interesting online services coming on, which some of them were about to imitate television. Some of those services were not about to imitate television. But anyway, the EU wanted to expand its audiovisual media directive into this new field of online services. So it had Television Without Frontiers directive already for some time. So they wanted to expand their ability to regulate also online services. So that was probably the most important reason why this directive was updated in 2007. And it seems that the EU is always moving forward or updating this directive when there are changes in the market or changes in the consumption habits of the people, so that it could get some kind of a hold of these new services and new consumption habits.
Predstavniki Velike Britanije so se zelo zauzemali, da prenovljena direktiva ne bi vključevala spletnih medijev, vendar neuspešno. Proces razloži Alafosi.
There were two kinds of perspectives or opinions on online services. The original proposal was actually making rather blunt or rather general new approach towards online services, so that it would. The original proposal was actually equalizing or seeing online services as equal as television. So it didn't make any difference, much difference, at least, between online video services and television. But there were also other forces, like the UK government. They wanted to make a clear difference between services which were television-like and services which were not television-like. And the reason why they wanted to have this kind of categorization was that they were afraid that this new regulation, new directive, would prevent or inhibit the growth of online video. That was at least the original reason, or official reason. But there was also some kind of a hope at the UK side that some services which were set up by British media companies online, would not be regulated at all. And that's what they wanted to happen, or made happen, after this directive was then put in practice. Because in practice, the British authorities have not been regulating any online services, online video services set up by British newspapers. So they wanted to make a difference between television-like and non-television-like services, so that television-like services would only be regulated, and the rest of the services would be, so to say, left alone.
Leta 2007 je Evropska komisija poleg prenove direktive o televiziji brez meja nameravala vzpostaviti tudi Evropski nadnacionalni nadzorni organ za elektronske komunikacije, a so ta načrt nacionalne vlade zavrnile. Zato je komisija prevzela pristop, ki se je pri reguliranju osredotočal na meddržavno sodelovanje, razloži Alafosi.
The original plan of the EU Commission in 2007 was to create some kind of a European super regulator, supranational regulator, European Electronic Communications Market Authority. And this was rejected by the national governments. And it has been the rejected proposal was then developed towards a new kind of approach, more intergovernmental cooperation. So after this was rejected, new organizations were created, like the body of the European regulators for electronic communications, BEREC, and also the European Regulators Group for Audiovisual Media Services. So they are now cooperating spectrum planning with the Radio Spectrum Policy Group of the EU and Radio European Radio Spectrum Committee. And this is sort of an interesting example of a case where there has been an effort by the EU Commission to create more supranational, more integrated approach, but which has been rejected by the member states and developed into a more intergovernmental form of media regulation and spectrum planning.
Direktiva o televiziji brez meja je kasneje doživela več sprememb in preimenovanj, ter je trenutno v procesu posodobitve. Razloži Harcourt.
Television Without Frontiers was replaced by Audiovisual Media Services in 2010. Mostly the update dealt with the loosening of advertising rules, including the introduction of product placement. However, there were lots of other proposals. For example, they extended existing restrictions for broadcasting to non-linear audiovisual services, including the internet, for example, right of reply. They also extended the country of origin principle to non-linear audiovisual media services, such as on-demand downloading of films and other programming via satellite, broadband, and the internet. So there was also a kind of introduction of dispute mechanisms. So instead of the European Commission having to sort out disputes, national regulatory authorities established a one-stop shop for complaints. So if a company was established in London, Ofcom would have dealt with all complaints from this time onwards. The Audiovisual Media Services Directive is now undergoing revision. And they came out with a proposal last year. there's nothing on pluralism, which is something actually you might want to mention, is that there was a kind of a lobbying for media transparency and provisions on media pluralism within the Audiovisual Media Services Directive, but this really hasn't come to fruition.
Kaj se še spreminja s trenutno direktivo, pove Ala Fosi.
The latest update, as far as I know, is related to again a growth of these online video services and new ways of using online video. And now it seems that the European Union wants to get hold on these new online video services, which are located mostly outside of the EU. For example, YouTube, Netflix, both of them are located in the US. And now the EU wants to have power also to regulate content in Netflix and to some extent in YouTube by updating this new directive. So whenever there is enough change and growth in the audiovisual market, the EU seems to then define that now it's good time to update the directive. At least this is one of the dimensions which is related to this issue.
Poslušate oddajo o evropski medijski politiki. Pred glasbenim premorom smo predstavili spremembe direktive o audiovizualnih medijskih storitvah. Zdaj se posvetimo še enemu primeru poseganja evropskih organov na področje medijev, ki prikaže razkol med težnjo Evropske komisije k deregulaciji trga na eni strani in parlamentovo težnjo k regulaciji lastništva medijev na drugi. We'll be right back. Leta 2011 se je Evropski parlament odzval na mađarski zakon o medijih, ki je v javnosti dvignil prah zaradi domnevnega ogrožanja svobode medijev. Evropski komisiji je parlament predlagal intervencijo, ker je menil, da ima mađarska vlada preveč vpliva na javne medije. Vendar ukrepanje komisije ni ustreglo pozivom parlamenta.
Mainly the comments on Hungary were to do with like intervention in the state media at that time and also a crackdown on journalists within Hungary by the government. And the European Commission responded by establishing a high-level group on media freedom and pluralism. However, the high-level group was more focused, I would say, on promoting competition to solve problems around pluralism than criticizing state intervention, I would say that.
Evropska komisija je na podlagi priporočil visokonivojske skupine za svobodo medijev in pluralizem ustanovila več organov za nadzor medijev in financirala več projektov, ni pa ustregla pozivom parlamenta po strožji regulaciji.
They funded a number of projects and they're excellent projects. There's strengthening journalism in Europe, mapping journalism, strengthening journalist rights, protections and skills, an index on censorship. And the Media Pluralism Monitor has been further funded, and also the Safety Net for European Journalists. But these are mainly aimed at providing training to journalists, and also there are some projects, particularly the one on mapping journalism, on tracking legislation at the state level and states' actions that could threaten journalistic freedom. So it's more funding and promoting transparency, but they're not going to introduce any kind of regulatory measures to prevent state intervention or harmonize national laws.
Od takrat je Evropska komisija vzpostavila še nekaj projektov, ki naj bi zagotavljali vsaj transparentnost medijskega lastništva, če že ne njegove regulacije. Vendar o posebni evropski zakonodaji, ki bi regulirala lastništvo medijev, še vedno ni sledu. Kaj so na tem področju storile evropske institucije, razloži Harcourt.
I mean, media transparency is really important because traditional instruments on the ownership have been removed. There's more reliance on competition law than in the past. Sector-specific rules like cross-media ownership and audience share have been removed, except for in perhaps central European states like Austria and Germany, and also Scandinavia as well. So they've been replaced with mainly audience share or higher market share limits, like 30 to 50% of the market, which is quite high, particularly for a small state. But of course, states are dealing with cross-border broadcasting, so there's very little they can do. However, what the European Commission has done is they ran a couple of workshops, I think, in 2014 and 15. They've come back and said, well, we don't want to anything specific to media transparency because we are doing all of these other things. And the other things that they are doing deal specifically with company law. They have a 2009 directive on the coordination of safeguards which require companies to record legal representation and register it in a national company register. So that has been harmonized at the European level. In 2012, they came out with a directive on the interconnection of central commercial and company registers. And that has been established in the European e-justice portal, which you can find online. It electronically interconnects national business registers. The OSI hasn't been so happy with this because public access is not guaranteed in all member states and fees often apply. So it's difficult for civil society members to get access if they don't have sufficient funds. However, the Commission has also come out with the 2013 Directive on the Harmonization of Transparency Requirements. In addition to this, So companies are required to publish financial information, including major holdings and voting rights, on a yearly and half-yearly basis. And from October this year, in 2017, the ESMA, which is the European Securities and Markets Authority, will set up a European electronic access point, which will link this electronically so you can access it from any member state.
Transparentnosti lastništva medijev bo prispevala tudi nova evropska zakonodaja proti pranju denarja, razloži Harcourt.
The other thing that the European Commission is doing is it is coming out with the fifth anti-money laundering directive. The fourth one was concluded last year and it's going to come into being in July 2017. And this requires all member states to introduce an alternate beneficial owner register, which is what the OSI and InfoAccess really wanted. Member states will be required to enable access to information about beneficial ownership of companies from January 2018. And information on beneficial ownership in each member state will be contained in a central register, and this will be accessible to banks, law firms, and, I quote, any person or organization that can demonstrate a legitimate interest, which includes, of course, civil society groups. This is going to be an interconnected register at the European level, and it's going to contain names of beneficiaries, including dates of birth, nationality, country of residence, etc. And this includes trust as well. So this, for civil society groups interested in media ownership, will be highly useful, I would have thought.
Za omenjeno direktivo proti pranju denarja se je potegovala Velika Britanija. Harcourt razloži, kako bo na britanske medije vplival Brexit.
The anti-money laundering directives were strongly pushed by the UK. The Confederation of British Industry in particular was pushing for stronger transparency across Europe, and they were pushing for the registry of companies. This is perhaps important. So, you know, post-Brexit, there might be a kind of realignment on this, although I think that the European Commission is quite intent on transparency, so that's a good thing. The other thing is that the UK will lose country of origin access to EU markets under Brexit. So broadcasters will probably relocate out of London to other European states if the UK doesn't get a deal on the single digital market, because they need to gain access to markets. Otherwise, broadcasters lose their licenses. This could mean less media transparency for the UK, depending where they establish themselves.
Čeprav Evropski parlament vedno znova poziva komisijo k večji zaščiti pluralnosti medijev, pa Harcourt zaključi, da komisija za kaj takega nima prave pravne podlage.
They don't really have any strong legal basis for legislation. There are some sorts of legal basis that they could turn to, but that would require unanimity and they are not going to get it.
Zeitgeist sta pripravila Vitin Zala.
Ja. Če ne bi bulil zaslon pametnega telefona, te po zaslugi Evrope prozorna vrata nikoli ne bi mogla presenetiti. Sledeč direktivi 89/654 Evropskega sveta morajo namreč prozorna vrata na primerni višini imeti jasno označbo.
Evropa gre deep. Delovanje Evropskega parlamenta. Oddajo sofinancira Evropski parlament.